Stars, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Daniel Cudmore. You know him as Colossus from the X-Men franchise. He now plays Diamond Jim in Corrective Measures, starring Bruce Willis and Michael Rooker. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Cudmore. It's an honor to speak with you.
You do, Jeff. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Like I said, it is a definite pleasure speaking with you. I've been wanting to talk to you for a bit.
Fair enough. I appreciate that, man. Hopefully I'm somewhat interesting.
I would imagine so. You've had a fascinating career. I mean, you are an actor, you're a stunt person. Which of those careers did you pursue first?
Acting? Yeah, I did a lot of acting in high school, but I was playing so many sports that, my natural direction was to head towards, scholarships and things like that. And it was never, okay, can I make a go of acting? It was just like, I liked acting. I enjoyed going to drama classes and I enjoyed going in plays and theater sports. And so that it was, when I came back from university, it was in acting, but I have a very broad sport background and I'm not your normal size for an actor. And so having, stunt coordinators and producers and people on the show would always be having trouble trying to find someone to double me. So it was always, hey, you want to just try it? And I was also very game to wanting to try all this stuff. It's all the stuff that I did growing up, falling down and crashing in through things and pretending to fight, you and your friends, when your kids pretending to fight or pretending you're sword fighting, it's all those things you've done. Just now you're getting paid for it.
So when did you decide you wanted to be an actor, and when did you transition from athlete to thespian?
I don't know if I ever, I don't know if there was like a moment where I went, nope, maybe around when I was 26, I was like, all right, if I'm going to do this, because I was kind of toying around with it. I came back from college. I started getting into acting. I had a lot of success, but I was so green and didn't have enough knowledge of really just acting as a whole. And so I was kind of bouncing around and still playing sports. And then finally, when I decided to stop playing sports, I came back to Vancouver and I said, all right, time to jump into classes. Let's really get into it and let's make a go of it. So at least I can sort of sit back if it didn't go anywhere and just say, hey, at least I tried and I went for it. And so that was around 26 years old.
I mean, you've chosen your path two very difficult professions, either an athlete or an actor. Both are, high risk type of careers. Mm-hmm. So one, how do you have the balls to have decided you're going to do two very high risk things? And what did your parents think when you were like, yeah, if an athlete doesn't work, I'm going to go into acting. Is it my
back? I know, right? And my dad, and it's so funny because my dad's a doctor. So it's very sort of, and I think he always thought that, one of his three boys, and he was kind of leaning on me that I was going to get into medicine, but I don't know. I liked playing sports. I did it all my life. And then acting was just something that I found really fascinating and I enjoyed and fun and cathartic and exciting and scary. And, those exciting, scary adrenaline type feelings. And they just sort of felt like aspects of sports and, obviously just being cathartic and going through a range of emotions. And that was just something that I think interested me because I just there wasn't a lot of emotions in my family. I mean, it's not saying that we were all Borg walking around as children, but, come from British parents, and British parents are very sort of like stiff upper lip, and we don't kind of go down that emotional road that often. Mm. So that was interesting for me. I think I just follow things that pique my interest and sort of excite me. And I like things that, I don't know, maybe it's the adrenaline. I like things that scare me a little bit. So I think, the aspect of never knowing when your next job's going to be, that's scary, but exciting. It's a little bit more stressful now that I'm a dad, but I'm also very fortunate that I've carved out a pretty good sort of resume and I guess a lot of experience. And I'm also in Vancouver, where it's one of the busiest places in the world for film and some of the most amazing crews and cast. So I'm fortunate.
So, I mean, the thing about stunt acting is that it is acting involved in stunt work, most certainly. So when you're thinking about acting and stunt work, how do those two careers complement one another? Do you find that being a good actor has helped you in the stunt world? And does your knowledge of stunts help you also become a stronger actor?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, any stunt is a physical performance. There's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end. There's something that's going on. Allowing yourself to be in that world and be that character and believing it wholeheartedly helps immensely with the scene, especially a fight. You can tell so much of a story and you don't even have to say any words. And then on the other side of it, just having that physicality and that understanding of your body for acting, I've played so many creatures and superformers and monsters, and just having that real understanding of the way my body moves helps me immensely. And also at the same time, if it's an action oriented film, the fact that I don't necessarily have to skip a beat. So you don't ever have to hide my face. I don't have to just sort of have a stunt double come in to do the scene. Can carry just so much more because it is just so much more of myself as the character.
But obviously doing stunts is also a very dangerous field. So as the actor in the role and you're doing your own stunts, how much of a concern of, you know, like you can't get yourself punched in the face, you know, with when you're going to be on screen as your main guy. I mean, a black guy out of character may not work for you. I mean, is there a sort of nervousness when you're doing the stunts as the actor, not just as the stunt double?
I think the funny thing is that I don't ever think about that. So I think maybe that sort of saved me. I think that sort of ignorance is a bit of a bliss. I did get punched in the face this summer by accident, but it actually worked perfectly for the scene because I was getting beat up. And so makeup didn't actually need to put anything on me because it was already coming out of my nose.
Oh shit.
But you know, I don't think too much about it. And I think the more you give something thoughts and energy, the more it's probably going to happen. Like, you know, I did a stunt years ago. And I remember it vividly. I was wearing the Predator costume and I was doing a big thing called a ratchet where you go flying backwards and crash into the ground. And I had the space mask on. And I remember somebody putting it on, it was held on by magnets. And they said, right before I was about to go, they said, "Oh, watch it go flying off your face and we'll have to do it again." And I remember just looking at him being like, "You just jinxed me." And like coming from the world of sports, like you don't say those things out loud because now you've just given that energy out and most likely it's going to happen. And for boom, right away, flying backwards, mask flies off. Next to, you know, two takes later, I'm like all beat up and I'm like, all right, now we're zap strapping it onto my head because I don't want it to come off again.
Right.
But I think the more you think about something, the more it's bound to happen, the more you're going to subconsciously do it somehow, or it's just out there in the ether.
Now I'm going to feel guilty if something happens to you that I jinxed you. I'd be like, oh, shit, I jinxed
you. Nah, man, Jeff, at this point, anything happens to me is usually done by myself.
So one of your most memorable roles, and it is you did such a great job, you were Colossus in the X-Men movies.
Yeah, I got to play a real cool character, man. That was fun.
I mean, that's one of those characters where before the current world of comic book movies where Easter eggs was just a common thing, he was that character that was inserted. You're like, oh shit, that's Colossus, holy crap, they put him in the movie. And that got to be you. And so how did you get involved and get to play Colossus?
I did a big cattle call audition, which is just a massive audition. One was in Vancouver. They did them all over the place. And they're just basically looking for someone that was of any close resemblance to what the character looks like without armor. And again, this was right at the beginning of my career. So I all credit to them. Like I knew, they knew I was green and I knew I was green. I had so much to learn, but I just kept coming back for callbacks. They just kept bringing me back and they would whittle down the field and then bring me back and whittle down the field and bring me back. And I think, you know, luckily for me, I looked and did a good enough job. And I think also at the same time, I think the location of where we were shooting, being here in Vancouver, I was the right place, right time. And got to play a very iconic character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or just the comic universe. And so I had a blast, but I was just lucky, I guess. And I don't know, some people could say you're lucky, some people say whatever you did leading up to it was all part of the plan, so who knows.
Now, did you know who Colossus was when you got the role? Did you already, were you familiar at all with the comic books and who this?
I was, yeah. So the funny thing is, I've told this story a million times. When I, growing up, I mean, the X-Men comics, the actual animated cartoon was on like right at 3 o'clock. And my school was right at the bottom of this, you know, mile and a half long hill, super steep. And so, you know, as a kid, that was like, I loved that cartoon, but I had to huff it with a huge book bag up the hill as fast as I could. And I'd always just get in with like a minute or two left in the show. Oh, so no. I'd get like 10 minutes of the show every single time it was on. So I knew it and I understood it. And then I started trying to collect comic books for a little bit when I was, I think I was around 13. A buddy of mine was a huge collector and had a massive collection. And I just didn't have the time for it. I didn't have the funds and I don't think I had the patience to really like take care of them properly.
Yeah.
I also had two brothers, so I'm sure they would have just torn them apart. But I knew comics and I knew the character and I of course knew the X-Men. And I always thought Wolverine was cool because he was Canadian and like, you know, oh, cool. Yeah. We don't get a lot up here. So we got one guy. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, of course I knew who Colossus was.
Yeah. And you got to work with Hugh Jackman, Wolverine himself in the movie. That must've been seriously surreal.
It was really cool. I mean, you know, hats off to him. Ultra talented, nailed the role, like just embodied it wholeheartedly. But also on top of that, just being a very kind class act. And that's always the worry, I think, when I was especially just getting in, I don't, you know, you hear horror stories of big name actors and how they treat individuals and all these sort of things. And that's usually along the lines of folklore and somebody's, you know, the story of I caught a fish and it was really this big, it was this big. You know, maybe someone had a bad interaction, but that turned into this person threw me off the edge of a cliff. But going into it, you just never know what kind of personalities you're going to deal with. And fortunate enough for me, every single actor that was on those franchise, every single movie was just fantastic and just so kind.
Yeah, I mean, I was a huge fan of the X-Men animated series when it came out. And, you know, I watched all the episodes and I probably will I've watched more episodes as an adult than I probably should have, but I still do watch the show. Yeah. And every time Colossus showed up, you thought to yourself, he's going to join the team now. He's there. They introduced him. He's back. He's going to be on the team. And then he always has an excuse why he walks away.
Yep.
And with Colossus in the movie, I thought I couldn't help but think the same thing. Like when you see Colossus in X-Men 2, you're like, all right, now they introduced Colossus to the movie. And then, you know, you kind of hope that he did it. Because like I said, every moment you showed up as Colossus was badass. Like you knew immediately this is a badass moment you're gonna have in this movie,
right?
And I mean, was there some talk to to boost up your role as you had more appearance?
No, I wish. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, when you know this character just has so much depth to him, and ultimately he's a pacifist, so I mean that's one of the biggest reasons he always leaves. He doesn't, and I think somebody that is, you know, ultimately, I don't know if it's been written in there, but somebody is just afraid of the power that he has and doesn't want to use it for the fear that he's going to do something bad with it by accident. But I always wanted to explore the character more and more and more. Like I, you know, the more it came along, the more there would be a little bit, but unfortunately when you start dealing with ensemble casts and that many characters and, you know, you start dealing with, unfortunately you put it down to a monetary, it's just basically monetary decisions. All right. Who's the bigger cast member and who's got which character and how much does that character play into the story? And, you know, and it just sort of trickles down. And when you're playing, when you just don't have a massive resume back then, and I'm just, you know, you're just kind of taking whatever you can get. And I didn't have the weight, nor did I think I've had the, the balls to go up to producers and be like, well, what's the deal, man? Like, let's have some more. You know what I mean? Now I'm in a total different place and be like, all right, guys, this is a little weak. Like, can we not up it up a little bit more now? But I mean, back then, not another chance. I'm just happy to be there.
Now, when you were going to go on screen as Colossus, what did they tell you about how they wanted the character to be played? Was there any aspect of it that you're like, well, you definitely want to play more like this, or just kind of wing it?
No, that was free for myself. I mean, the only thing that I really wanted to do was keep a Russian accent. But again, like this was, I think this was the third project that I'd ever worked on in my life. And I think either A, my Russian accent wasn't up to par for Bryan Singer, or he just didn't like accents. But you know, I'm pretty, toot my own horn, but I'm pretty good at accents and I can get them down pretty well. But whatever that may be, he wasn't into it. And you know, as the director, as the captain of the ship, I said, this is yours, we'll go with it. But as far as character, that was all just who I wanted to know, who I interpreted it, right? And that's always the tricky thing, because it, like every piece of art or anything that someone reads, you interpret it different than someone else does. It's just the way that your mind is framed. So that's always the scary part as an actor. What do you see in the character that you can bring from yourself, that you can bring to the character and really embody it? And so, I don't know. I just kind of, these are the, you know, things of, you know, pacifist and a protector and somebody who's, you know, larger than life and doesn't need to fight because he just has that presence and things like that, that just kind of, I thought would be great for the character, bringing him to life and from what I'd seen in the research. So who knows? I just kind of went for what I thought.
So when you're playing Colossus on the screen, obviously they do the transformation thing where you have, you know, you get the metal, you know, yeah, the metal body and all that. Is that fully CGI? Is it makeup? How is that still set up?
All of that is CGI. The only one that we didn't have CGI was in X-Men 3. And that was just for the really, really deep shots when I'm far in the background. Instead of having to paint, you know, CGI paint all these scenes, they just had a sort of foam latex suit that was basically just arms, a cowl, and then a helmet that was a plastic, and it was a chrome dipped plastic, which was really, really cool. And so they had done that for those sort of far deep shots. But most of the time, anything that was close up was fully CGI.
Well, one of the coolest moments that Colossus had got a chance to do in the franchise was you got to do the fastball special with Wolverine, which was just badass. Cause it was, once again, one of those moments where you read in the comic books and you're just waiting to see it in a movie. And once again, this is when I think it was a little more surprising to the audience when something in the comic books, like a fan service, is seen on screen. Cause nowadays it's kind of expected that you're gonna get the, you know, sure, Easter eggs and that nature. But back then, X-Men was like part of the beginning of that whole thing where you got to really get incorporated into the comic book universe.
Sure.
So for me, one of the coolest moments was the fastball special. Did you have a favorite moment that you thought to yourself as Colossus, this is so, you know, this is the coolest moment, I'm really, you know, glad that this is on screen?
Right. I mean, just the first time I got to armor up, that was just, you know, that was my moment in X-Men 2. Fastball special was fantastic, especially getting to throw Hugh Jackman. That was cool. But yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, ultimately, all these movies come from comic books. So you have to honor where it comes from. So you can't just take something that has such a strong fan following and all of a sudden just completely manipulate it and take away anything that sort of made it what it is. And so that is the wonderful thing that I think people have started to realize, is that you've got to pay homage to where it originally came from. And all those things are what makes it so great.
See, that's why I never understand the people who are say anything against like the idea of fan service, or use that as like a bad word. Fan service is so, I think, important to some of these movies, Avengers Endgame, for instance, where, you know, you have certain moments where like that's from the comic book, stuff like that. I think it's essential. Right. And the X-Men franchise, I think, was the first one that really did it successfully, you know, introduce that kind of stuff. And the going back to, let's say, Spider-Man No Way Home and things of that nature, where they introduced some multiverse, there seems to be indication that X-Men franchise exists somewhere in the Marvel multiverse. Have you heard any discussion of maybe an appearance of some of the old X-Men characters or anything like that?
I haven't heard a thing. I don't know how that is going to play out, being that I sort of, you know, once Days of Future Past, that was the last one that I had done. And then with the whole sort of whatever went down with Deadpool, I don't know if that would even if I would go and play in that world. But as far as just bringing X-Men back, I don't see why they shouldn't. There's so many great characters in that universe that could just, I mean, the movies can just do so well on their own. But like all these gigantic ensemble features with all the characters. Like, why not? Why not bring them in?
I mean, yeah. I mean, Days of Future Past was a great movie. And unfortunately, you know, the part that's memorable is when Colossus gets torn in half. You're like, no, you know, that's like heartbreak. You're like, son of a bitch. But I think everyone would like to see the character come back. And like I said, for a character that didn't have so many minutes of film, it's one of those characters that everyone just remembers from that mm-hmm. franchise. I mean,
right.
He is, this was a, such a fun character. Every moment he was in, like I said, it was just so well done.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of also adds to the career that you've had with, recently you played Subject 11 in Superman and Lois, mm-hmm. where you got to fight Superman. So basically it was watching Colossus fight Superman. And that was really awesome. So how cool was it to fight Superman and get to hold your own as your own ass kicking character?
It was great. And then like Tyler, who plays Superman, is such a great dude. And he's sort of becoming new into the world of, you know, on-screen fighting, and he's just doing so well. And the team, the stunt team that they have over there, is so talented. But yeah, I just, you know, there's so much great TV in Vancouver right now. It just happens that it's all DC world, but I'm happy to play in all of that. And hey, fighting Superman, like, why not? That's great. I love, you know, as much as I would love to be good guys all the time, I seem to be playing a lot of bad guys lately, and I'm fine with it. It's like,
there's not many people that can say they beat the shit out of Superman for a
right?
bit.
I mean, it's not easy just for a little bit. And then I got my ass handed to me.
As must happen with Superman. Superman's power seems to be just not losing.
It's just what he does. I mean, that is the ultimate trick with Superman, why it is so hard to get on board as a fan a lot of the times, is because there is no human quality. There's nothing that you can latch onto. Right there. Right. He can't be killed. He's can't be beat by anybody. You know, there's nothing. You start to get a little bit tired by the old hat of being like, oh, Superman's winning again. Great. You know, and that's why Zack Snyder's version was so good, and why going into the world of him being the internal turmoil of the weight of that sort of that responsibility, and that is what ultimately gets people on board, because there's humanity. Everyone can understand, you know, having too much responsibility, not being able to cope with it, and so on and so forth, and sort of dealing with the weight of that. So that was a smart play on their part.
So, and a character like Superman, once again, has been played by so many different people. With Tyler as Superman in Superman and Lois, mm-hmm. did you kind of sense, was there any pressure, do you think, on making sure that his Superman was somehow different, or, you know, was there any discussion on how that would have to be translated to the fight to make sure that he, you know, lives up to, you know, all the expectations of all the other Supermen who come before him?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, like, I think whatever he's decided to do is working. I mean, that is his version. And again, like we talk about, everyone has their own interpretation, and they're going to present it the way they think. But yeah, no, I don't think there was any outward discussion on, hey, I wouldn't do this because everyone else has done that. It was just he had what he wanted to do. And then the fight team and the stunt team were just had laid out a really well laid out plan. And so, you know, he's knocking it out of the park. He's doing really, really well.
So how much time did it take to choreograph that fight? Especially with all those special effects added to it, that had to make things far more complicated.
Yeah, I think we rehearsed most of the fight in a day. I mean, this is the world of TV, so we don't have the time that a feature film would, right? Like a feature film, if we shot that scene, it would be on such a grander scale, and we'd be shooting for like a week or two, and we'd be rehearsing for like a week. You know, there's so much more time and money to do it. TV's 8-day shooting schedule, we don't have a lot of time. But I think, you know, we shot it in over like 2 days, and then a lot of it was all just, you know, edited. And it was two days of shooting and 1 day of rehearsing.
Does all the special effects and CGI complicate it a lot? Because I mean, because as your career, you've been around for a while now, as CGI has become more and more integral to these movies. Mm-hmm. And your stunts, you know, from some stunts that are done physically, some are done CGI. Because you're dealing with something like Superman, once again, you had super speed, you had him at one point flying up, you had to choreograph all that, make it look believable. is that a much harder thing to try to act and also choreograph for yourself?
I think choreographing it was probably a little bit more technical, because now you're thinking about angles and you're thinking about all the different way it's going to look. And as far as the fight goes, it's pretty much the same. You're still trying to fight an individual. Sometimes, I mean, having fights, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was fighting in X-Men Days of Future Past, I was fighting a tennis ball, you know, and I was running and getting hit by a pretend something. There was nothing there. So that stuff becomes difficult. But I think ultimately with CGI, if you have too much CGI, it's like when you're watching a movie and somebody's fake crying. Your body immediately goes, no, don't fool me. Don't try to fool me. And then your natural reaction is you get angry. Like, well, why is this person trying to fool me? Mm. But if it comes from a real place, then you're immediately emotionally invested into that performance, because you're moved by it. And I think that's the same thing with a real fight, is just brings you in, because you know that's two individuals that are trying to hurt each other. So, you know, that curiosity of yourself is always going to watch. You know, you don't want to, but you should. It's like a car accident. You just drive by. You shouldn't look, but you just got to kind of look. But if you have too much CGI, what happens is, again, I personally just kind of go, don't try to fool me. But if you blend them so well, if you blend them really, really, really well, and you can't differentiate from where one starts and where one ends, then it just enhances it. And I think both should enhance each other. And that's the best way to work. And I mean, my sort of a little humble opinion, I think that's the best way to play it. That's always going to get the fan to be really invested in it, because you can see that emotional turmoil that's going on. And then it's just upped a little bit more.
You know, I think that's really funny when you're talking about fighting the tennis balls. When you're filming the scene and you're being chased by a tennis ball or punching out a tennis ball, how do you not break up and laugh a little bit? Because that's got to be very funny to do. Like, oh my God, I got smacked by a guy on a tennis with a tennis ball.
I think after cut, you're laughing your ass off once they've yelled cut a few times. But I think ultimately, you know, it just kind of playing in the world of CGI and green screen and all that stuff really just takes you back to the time when you were a kid, when you're in the woods playing around, pretending that big monsters were coming, and you know, that vivid imagination was playing out. And so it's a nice exercise in acting to really just go, you know what, I'm just going to go for it here. Like, you don't have a choice, because if you don't go for it, then again, we go back to that. You don't wholeheartedly sell it. And then the audience goes, no, I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
No. Don't really want to watch this anymore. You know, it's natural.
So you think the difference between a good actor and a bad actor is the ability to reach that child that was fighting in the woods, as it were?
I don't know if it's really, it's just convincing yourself enough that you are there, bringing it from a true emotional place, wherever it is, and trying to be as truthful to yourself. And that's the trickiest thing about acting, because we have so many guards up throughout our life to protect ourselves from being vulnerable. But when you get on screen, you have to be vulnerable in all situations and be real. And so that's a tricky thing. That's the biggest fight as an actor, because all of a sudden you're trying to put something on when you should just feel it. Yeah. Oh, I should be angry here, as opposed to, no, I'm angry here. So the difference is just, you can see it. And if you're in a feature film and you're sitting there and you're on a 50-foot screen that people are watching, there's no place hiding. You can't hide. You can't hide whether you're doing it or you're not doing it, right? Because the audience will go, nope. No. Because that's just natural. That's what humans do. We read each other.
Yeah. I do think the audience is far smarter than sometimes people think they are. You know, like, you do pick up on so much stuff. Like, they talk about the uncanny valley effect on CGI, where you can tell, no matter how realistic you make the animation, when something's just not right, something's off. And it's just the little stuff you don't even think about. Yeah, the audience is extremely savvy. I think they're becoming more savvy as these movies become more, you know, CGI heavy. I think they're getting even more savvy about how this all functions. It must be even harder to try to trick them into making, to believe in what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's where it becomes the master of film work, when you have the ability to do something and you're making a sort of unreal fantasy world, but the audience is fully invested in it. And I think, you know, for me, what that always leads down to is a true emotional story of human beings that is at the core wonderful acting and writing. and everything on the outside is just the frosting on the sundae. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the candy and everything like that that just adds to what you are watching. And if the story's there, the writing, the acting, the cinematography, the directing, and everything that goes along with it, if it's there to the core, it's there and truthful, then everything else just makes it bigger.
Well, you're now in a movie called Corrective Measures, and with Bruce Willis and Michael Rooker.
Yep.
What has that experience been like? And can you tell us a little, or listen a little bit about what the movie's about?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun action movie where it's a world where there was an event and human beings now have mutant type powers, and some use for good and some use for bad. And we are in a jail because my character does not use them for good, and there is sort of a world where I'm waiting to get my powers back so I can exact some revenge and sort of go from there.
So the character you play is called Diamond Jim. Mm-hmm. What power does Diamond Jim have, and what were you told by the character prior to getting the role?
He has diamond hard sort of skin. You can't be injured, essentially. So it's a far departure from what I've played before. and obviously they all have extreme strength. But I mean, that was really what I was given before. I mean, it was just a brief breakdown of this character by the director and writer, Sean Patrick Riley. And I didn't get to work directly with Bruce Willis, which I really wanted to, but he ended up working out of Atlanta, and but I got to meet Rooker, but I never had any scenes with him. So, you know, some really heavyweights in the industry that have been around for a while. And I just wanted to geek out and meet Bruce Willis, because I was a huge diehard fan.
And if, you know, you might have had a chance to like punch him or something during the movie. Gotta be the guy who punches out Bruce Willis.
That'd be pretty fun. Fantastic.
So in the movie, because you're convicts, all those superhero abilities are suppressed.
Yes.
So in the movie, do you get a chance to use your powers at all, or is it one of those things where it's kind of like in the prologue, but once the movie is in the prison, you don't get a chance to actually show it off?
Maybe. I don't know if I'm allowed to say maybe I do, maybe I don't.
So is your role, or like, what is the nature of your role in the prison? Are you like one of the toughs? Are you?
Yeah, I'm one of the toughs. I'm not exactly the nicest guy. I'm kind of running some things, you know, not the highest level in the prison, but you know, I'm running things at a pretty high level, and I'm not the nicest guy, and just bad all over.
So, is the backstory revealed in the movie of Diamond Jim? Or
not a ton of it. No, not a ton of it. I mean, again, you don't have the time to really get into every single person's backstory. You can kind of get the sense of why he's there throughout the movie. He's not the nicest character, and sort of enjoys being that character.
So how do you prep to play a character like Diamond Jim? I mean, is there, once again, and also within the prison, kind of convict thing, once again, that's seems like a kind of complex. It's you're also in a kind of enclosed area, probably a lot of other people in the film as well. So how do you kind of like mentally prep for it?
I think you just have to get down to what you think. Why is he the way he is, you know, getting down to the humanity of him. I'm like, why is he so angry? What different elements that has made him so angry? Why does he want to hurt so many people? And why does he enjoy having this power? And so, you know, I did my own work and sort of broke that down, and then ultimately just bring it in and play it the best you can. I mean, playing in the prison, I don't think you can really play in the prison too much. That's just an outside factor that you can't really control. So it's just, you sort of live and breathe as a character who just happens to be behind bars.
Now, did they provide you a backstory, or did you kind of develop your own backstory, like to kind of figure out how you think the character, or where the character came from?
They gave me a bit of a backstory. I mean, the writer director gave me a bit of a backstory to understand why and where he is, why he's there, and which is always helpful. And I think a little bit of it ends up being revealed in the movie.
Well, I mean, it sounds fantastic. Like I said, because you know, you're in it. You got, you said Willis, you got Rooker. It sounds like a very fun concept, the kind of like whole Supermax concept in the movie.
Yeah.
So when is it expected to be released?
That I'm not 100% sure. That's on, it's going to be on Fox's streaming whenever that comes forward. I think maybe it's in 2022. So I'm not 100% sure. But as soon as I know, I'm going to put it on my Instagram and Twitter and everything like that to try to promote it.
That, you know, that's great. I like that. It's that when it sounds like the actors invested in the film, because sometimes, you know, sometimes I talk to actors, they don't seem like they're all that invested. Like I've actually had one actor, I'm not going to say who it is, but one actor was like, and I was talking about the movie, and I was like, you know, why did you choose this movie? What was it about that you really liked? And he's like, the paycheck. They paid me, right. and the check cleared, and I'm in that movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, moving on to the next movie. Let's talk about something else
then. Yeah, right. I know, it's tricky. You got to enjoy what you do. I mean, ultimately, like, you can do anything for a paycheck.
Yeah.
Right, like, you know, I mean, it's a tricky one because some people become jaded along the lines, and it's also tricky too because, like, you've got to go back to remembering when you just wanted a job. Like, you were in acting class and going, oh man, I can't wait to get an agent. No, I can't wait to just book some work. I've been working on it and you know, putting this on tape and going in for an audition and finally booking things, and then next thing you know, people are asking you to be in their films and you're just like, all right, what is a pay shirt? Right. You know, it's yeah. It's a hard one, man. It's sometimes it's kind of sad to watch when somebody gets to that point.
So for you, is making movies as fun now as it used to be? Like, is a little bit of that jadedness kind of creeping in a little bit? You're like, nah, I that movie's not big enough for me, or I want to do
something else. No, I don't think there's ever going to be a point where I'm like, ah, it's not big enough for me. I think ultimately I just like working. I've always loved working because I love the team aspect of it. Again, this comes back to the world of sports, but you got to remember, like, there's such a big team to even on the smaller scale that works behind the scenes to make this movie happen. And it's a lot of fun. Like, you're making movies, right? Like, you're not doing anything. Like, you're not curing cancer. You're not doing brain surgery. You're just making movies, and these are purely for people's entertainment. This is art. This is to make someone think or make someone feel and make someone just forget about their day and just have fun. And, you know, I think you just gotta, again, I'm in the position where I'm not there in my career where I'm constantly getting people knocking on my door, being like, here, get in this movie. We've got this going. I'm still auditioning. I'm still trying to get to that next level. And I think, like every actor, you're trying to just keep getting to the next level and getting into something that really kind of pushes you and scares you and makes you think, can I do this? And figuring out a way to do it. I don't know. I think you got to keep that excitement. If you lose that excitement and if you lose that fire, then maybe it's time to go and do something else.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting what you said about acting and the art. Because, like I said, I don't think movies or making the movies can be underestimated, the importance of that. Because I remember you talked to people, and it was a meme. I'm not even going to go into what the meme was, but basically the idea that during COVID and lockdown, it was watching movies, you had the television that got you through, you know, some lot of downtime lockdown. Yeah. And it really was like when things are hard, you turn to art. And totally. The movies like The X-Men, and it sounds like Correct Imagine, those movies that are that wonderful escapism, I think that is so important to all of us.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're not, you know, not every single thing that we're gonna make is gonna win an Oscar, but
right,
you know, ultimately it's gonna, like I said, somebody could be having an absolutely shitty day and you go and turn on a movie and it washes away. You just lose yourself in just being entertained, or it maybe gives you hope, or it makes you think. It's just, that's the wonderful thing about art. That's, you know, we play in the crazy world of art and commerce, and it's a tricky when you're dealing with money and monetary value and art at the same time. But, you know, ultimately you just want to make people smile, laugh, cry, you know, cheer.
You know, when I come home after a long day of work, I don't turn on the Oscar movie. I turn on the fun, you know, the fun action movie, you know, like I said, X-Men, the Avengers, stuff like that. I don't turn on like, oh, let's watch Les Mis. I'm in the mood for fun.
Right. Yeah. And again, like every film is usually out of a mood. Like, there's so many times that my wife and I are like, what kind of mood are you in? I'm not in the mood for this. This is too much. I just want to, but then sometimes you're in the mood just to be enthralled in something and you know, get taken away to another place. And so you never know. It's just, that's the wonderful thing about art. And we also live in a time with streaming that we have so much, at our fingertips. It's insane. Like I was thinking the other day, my wife and I are laughing because our kids are just being like, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch this. We're trying to flick through Netflix, 1,000 different kids shows. My wife and I look at each other. Remember when you had to wait till 3:30 in the afternoon and you had half an hour to watch your show and, you know, 25% of it was commercials? Then I'm sitting there, my kids are arguing about this and that and don't want to watch this, and I'm like, all right, fine, we'll look at Disney, we'll look at Netflix, we'll look at this and that, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's just ridiculous.
We are spoiled now. I mean, there's not it's hard to say there's nothing on TV anymore. I mean, there's about 40 streaming networks, there's cable, there's regular TV. There's gotta be something out there. If you can't find anything to worth watching, there's something that's real on you.
If you can't find anything to watch, read a book. Like,
yeah, exactly.
There's just so much out there. And that can be a blessing and a curse at the same time, because the problem is now, like, you get on a TV series that you get onto a streaming service and you think it's fantastic. You think it's going to do great. And it just crickets. And next thing you know, you've done one season and it's gone. So it's a really tricky thing. Whereas, you know, usually when you deal with network TV and they've invested that much money, they'll at least do a season or two just to see if, you know what, the first season, all the actors were just getting their legs under and the characters were just being developed. And season two is when we're really going to sort of dive into backstories and things like that. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
Oh, that's how I felt. Like, I remember back when Supernatural, the TV show, also filmed in Vancouver, was the first season. You thought to yourself, you know, is this going to make it? Is it not? But they, you know, they trusted it to give a second season before, you know, this 15 seasons, 15 seasons into that show.
And it's crazy. And I can't believe it. The 15 seasons in Vancouver, I think I did. I don't even think I worked on it.
Well, you know, it's probably why they went off the air eventually.
Yeah. Right. No, I think at that point, I probably had the same hair as one of them. And I probably looked a little too similar and it was just not going to happen.
You know, I would have been very excited to see you punch out Sam.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
So, so what is next for you?
Currently working on a TV show on the CW called Kung Fu. So I'm doing, I just finished the second episode. I'm doing a 3-episode arc as a bad guy. and then who knows after that? We'll see. Just constantly putting things on tape and hoping for the best.
Well, Mr. Kubler, it was great to talk with you. I enjoyed the conversation.
You as well.
Like I said, it was a fun to talk, especially talk about Colossus and correct dimensions and everything like that. So thank you very much, sir, and I hope you have a fantastic night.
You as well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.